the bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf, your source for total wealth management. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the show are solely those of Roe, his guests, and callers. Now let's begin the show. Here's your host, Roe Diefendorf.
Thank you for joining me again on Three-Dimensional Wealth. I'm your host, Roe Diefendorf, and today we're going to be talking about ethical wills, putting your values on paper. And to do that, I have probably the authority of ethical wills worldwide, and that's Barry Baines, M.D. And Barry is now the Chief Medical Director of UCARE in Minnesota, and he's also the Associate Medical Director of the Hospice of the Twin Cities, but he is also the CEO of the Legacy Center, which is an organization dedicated to preserving stories, values, and meaning for individuals, communities, and organizations. And so he's written a paperback, a small book on ethical wills, and a very valuable tool. So we want to spend this next hour, Barry, learning as much as we can about you, because I think it's a very important tool for people up and down the line. So first of all, I want to say thank you and welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm very excited, Roe, to be on your show and sharing some information with your listening audience.
Ethical wills. I'm sure that, you know, when I put that phrase out there, it comes, all kinds of things pop into people's heads. But maybe you can define, as the authority, what is an ethical will?
Yeah, I always like to use what I call my elevator speech on what an ethical will is, and at the end of this, which is just takes about 30 seconds, everybody in your audience will pretty much know more than 99% of the world population about ethical wills. And basically, an ethical will is a way to record and share your values, beliefs, life's lessons, hopes, love and forgiveness with your family, friends, and community. Think of it as your legacy of the spirit or your legacy of values. That's basically what an ethical will is.
But there's an interesting origin. I mean, when did these begin? I mean, is this a phenomenon of the last half dozen years?
No, actually, ethical wills have a very rich history. In fact, I didn't invent the term ethical wills, but ethical wills go back about 3,500 years. And generally, people regard the first ethical will in the scriptural writings, the Old Testament, Genesis chapter 49, when Jacob, one of the patriarchs, before he dies, gathers his sons around the bedside and dispenses blessings, commands, advice, instructions to his sons. Similarly, you see this in New Testament writings as well. I always quote John chapters 15 to 18 for people who want to just, you know, read on this. Again, this was Jesus with his disciples, again, kind of passing on blessings, advice, commands, instructions. So it's something that really goes back a long way. Now, clearly, ethical will started more in terms of an oral tradition, but then when writing became more commonplace, people began to write ethical wills, and then they kept them with their last will and testament, which I think is where, you know, ethical wills kind of got their name, is by being closely associated with a person's last will and testament. And some written ethical wills from as far back as the 11th century have titles on it like Ethics of the Fathers or Teachings of the Fathers. And so this is something that in the past dozen years or so has really seen a rediscovery, as it were, and has become a lot more popular and getting a lot more mainstream. And I've certainly seen this in the 10 years or so that I've been working in this area. And so it's really been rediscovered, but the history of it goes back really quite a ways.
You mentioned that it would be kept with a last will and testament. I mean, is it considered a legal document?
No, that's the interesting thing about it. An ethical will is not considered a legal document as compared to two other wills that people are probably familiar with, the last will and testament, your legal will, which is a legal document, and a person's living will, or also known as an advanced care plan or an advanced directive. Both of those documents are considered legal, and an ethical will is not.
Okay. Now, how did you first get interested, started, and become the authority?
Okay, well, I probably just became the authority, as it were, out of luck, because I'm I'm humbled by the long-standing tradition of this overall. But how I got involved in ethical wills is actually an interesting story. That's not too long, and everybody likes stories. As you had mentioned earlier, I'm a hospice medical director, and typically in our hospice program, we meet as a team with chaplains, social worker, nurses, bereavement folks, volunteer coordinators, therapists, etc., and review our patients. And we had a patient in our program who told the chaplain that his suffering was like 10 out of 10, where 10 is like the worst you can imagine, because he felt that he was going to die and there was going to be no trace that he was ever on the earth. And all of us just felt like, ah, you know, what an awful feeling. And we didn't know what we were going to do to help this man, and it popped into my head. I had remembered reading, literally about 10 years ago, about this tradition or custom called an ethical will, where you pass on essentially values. Where it was important in this case is this was a gentleman who actually didn't have much in the way of material wealth. He didn't have a lot of education, but he had a family that he loved, and yet he was suffering because he felt that he would be totally forgotten. So when I mentioned this idea of a way to pass on, you know, kind of pass on what you've learned, not just learned, and passing on your values, everyone on the team thought it was a great idea. And after rounds that day, the chaplain and I got together. We put together a number of questions that he could ask this man. And when the chaplain saw the man later in the week, he asked if he'd be interested in doing this. And this man just grabbed onto this the way a drowning person would grab onto a life preserver. And so they hastily and fairly quickly sketched out the answers to the questions. And as soon as he was done, the man said that the suffering that he was experiencing completely disappeared. And when the chaplain told us the following week about this, we were just blown away at how much of an impact this had by leaving this written legacy of his values, his life lessons, his experience, his love for his family. And so everybody turned to me and said, well, Barry, since you're the expert on this, can you move this along for us? Because everybody was very impressed with how helpful this was. So I said yes, because I was also just totally awed by the power of this and what it could do for this man. And so I just embarked on a course of putting together ways to assist people in writing an ethical will through writing exercises and things like that, and also pull together some examples to help people do that. I also, in the process, had to write my own ethical will, which is always a good thing to do, and maybe we'll have a chance to chat a little bit about that later.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I got started. And then, interestingly, after a few years, people outside of hospice came to me and said, you know, this is really for more than just, you know, people at the end of life. And I said, oh, I definitely agree, you know, with that. And since then, it's just been kind of going on its own journey, you know, really making its way into a lot of different areas. You know, certainly, you know, end of life is an important area, but I'm seeing a lot more interest in this in just about every aspect of people's lives, certainly playing a big role in financial planning, where people are trying to identify values that are important to them. It's a way to leverage their current success into lasting significance. Certainly in the senior population, there's a lot of interest in that. Also baby boomers. You know, there was this Allianz Insurance Company study about 2 years ago that identified that what the baby boomers really think is important is having this from their parents, this idea of what was important to them, what they valued, what they learned from life, and passing on certainly their love as well. And so I'm just seeing lots of people at different points in their life being very interested in this idea of creating this legacy.
I remember that Allianz study because they selected me as the ideal legacy advisor.
Oh, fabulous.
And so we had some input into some of the things they were doing. You know, it's interesting. You're on the show Three-Dimensional Wealth, and so it's not just about financial wealth. This is about personal wealth, financial wealth, and social wealth. And so we spend time with our clients helping them pass on their personal wealth. And the interesting thing that I found is that I thought this was for the generations that came beyond, you know, for the children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and that, you know, this was what it was about. And then, as we're going through, I realized that what was happening is, as older people got further along in their life, they came to this sort of fork in the road, and it was either they went down this thing of, you know, road of despair, or one of validation. And that's really what this started to do. And just as you were talking about this fellow that said, you know, the pain, there was the pain, this desperation that, mm-hmm. you know, he was going to be wiped off without anything happening, and the validation that comes along that says, you know what, maybe really I have done something of value, of worth, let me pass it on and share it. And I'm finding that with the individuals, as you've articulated, that are working on this themselves, it's as meaningful, if not more meaningful, than those that they actually are going to try and pass something along to.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
One of the things that we talked about is this a legal document. I mean, what's the perception from the legal community? Do they think this is legitimate? Do they think this is a fad? What's your exposure?
Yeah, my experience has been, quite honestly, somewhat mixed. I would say that in general, there's a small group of attorneys who actually more or less just register a concern that even though it's not considered, that ethical wills are not considered a legal document, is this something that might potentially cause some legal havoc, as it were? Then I think there are probably the bulk of attorneys that are really pretty neutral about it. But then on the other side of things, there is a growing group of attorneys who think that this is actually important, because a lot of these things that people want to say doesn't really have an address in a legal will, per se. Mm-hmm. Now, there have been some spin-offs on that. There have been a number of attorneys that write what's called a values-based will that oftentimes may contain some of this. Certainly, the group that I'm in contact with, the attorneys that I speak with, generally tend to be more favorably, impacted by ethical wills, think it's a good idea, and I have just some great stories where they've really brought the idea of ethical wills up and have really changed the face of what their clients were going to wind up doing, more particularly in terms of either charitable inclinations overall, or even just having more of an impact on their family. And so it's kind of interesting. Actually, can I share a short story about that?
Sure, go ahead. We may take a break, but let's give it a shot.
Okay. Well, actually, why don't
we're going to take a break, Barry.
That sounds good.
I hear I was getting some music fading in, so hold that story.
Yes.
And we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with more Three-Dimensional Wealth. Thank you.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Business. Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roe Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roe Diefendorf.
Our show for today is Ethical Wills, Putting Your Values on Paper. And I've got Barry Baines, MD, with us. And just before our break, he was going to tell us a story, so I'm going to turn you on right from there.
Okay, we'll have it turn us into story hour, I guess. Anyway, the story I wanted to tell was actually of an attorney who I knew who had a couple that came in to see him that wanted to just, you know, put their last will and testament together. Interestingly, they didn't have any kids of their own. They had five nieces and nephews. And what they wanted to do was you know, told the attorney, how about we just divide our estate by five and just give something to each of the nieces and nephews. And this attorney was aware of ethical wills and kind of knew his clients a little bit more. I think both of them were like PhDs and, you know, taught in academic institutions, were very highly educated, and kind of pitched the idea of just doing an ethical will. And they kind of bid on it and went for it, and he helped them out with some resources, and then they put it together. And what was clear, that education was very important. So when they got back together with the attorney, what he suggested is that they put their money into two buckets. In one bucket, and this is a technical term in buckets in financial planning circles, I guess. But in one bucket, just do the divide by five so everybody gets a, you know, part of the estate. But the other bucket, what they did was they set up a trust for not only the nieces and nephews, but for future generations in that family to tap into for educational support, for higher education, which really resonated with them because that was a value that was just so important to them. And so they felt really, you know, really good about it. And so that's just one of the ways, you know, that it can be leveraged.
Can we do a short commercial here for your book, Barry? It's a book, Ethical Wills, Putting Your Values on Paper. But where could someone buy that book?
You can actually get it direct from my website, which is www.ethicalwill.com. Or you can get it at Amazon. You can get it at any online bookstore. You can get it at Borders, you know, Barnes & Noble. It's pretty much, you know, wherever books are sold, as it were. The advantage of, if you go to my website, though, is I'd be more than happy to sign the book for you. As well, so you can order it that way. But again, anyway, what's really important is to get it. Many libraries have copies of it as well, so you can you know, also check it out in that way.
Very practical tool, which ties into in the beginning of the show you started to say about how the financial planning industry is moving towards life planning, what I call sort of total wealth planning, and so how is that really tying in, and how are you visiting with associations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think basically is that this is a different aspect of financial planning. The ethical will being what I call the voice of the heart, as it were. There's really, again, two things that I think ethical wills do in the whole estate financial legacy planning process. Number one, it really helps people to, again, leverage their values on into the future, that journey from current success to lasting significance. And it's that way to pass on what you've learned, not just what you've earned. I always think of why people write an ethical will to, you know, really honor the past and capture the present and inform the future. And in the process of doing this total wealth planning, by identifying priorities is just really a way for people to make an impact and really leave the world a better place. And I don't, you know, mean it in a, you know, being a Pollyanna about this, but I think there are a lot of people that are searching for meaning in their life and trying to find things that are going to make a difference in their life. And the exercise of going through putting together an ethical will is just an excellent way to do that, which, again, from a monetary or at least material wealth perspective, can really help people identify ways that they can support causes that they really believe in and really make a difference in other people's lives as well. And I think financial planners are in a good spot to actually help to be that the quarterback, as it were, of the team, you know, working with the client and their family to kind of really do some good.
Well, it ties into that whole legacy study and sort of the thinking of the difference between inheritance and a leaving a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
But you put together some great bullet points. I think this is either from your book or I know it's in your website. But the title of it was Why Write an Ethical Will? And some of the bullet points I think that are really pretty good. First of all, I think this is true. We all want to be remembered. Mm-hmm. And we all want to leave something behind, you know, and so that's that sort of feeling of legacy. Second one you said is, if we don't tell our stories and the stories from whom we come, no one else will, and they'll be lost forever. You know, and I always say, you know, memories fade quickly, and it doesn't take very long for the things that we thought were important to be lost. It helps you identify what you value most and what you stand for. One of the things, and you said on the values, we've incorporated what's known as valgenics testing, and this is Dr. Rob Musgrave from Australia has identified 60 out of 120 values, but 60 values that in a short period of time can be highlighted, and that's sort of where we start as we talk about ethical wills or what we call a family manuscript, something like that. Any other things that come to mind for you, Barry, that are the highlights of why we should be doing this?
Well, I think you've, from the website, the points that are there, I think, are the highlight. And again, it's this idea of, you know, people want to connect to their roots and pass something on to future generations. And it's really kind of thinking ahead. It's not, just your kids, but it's really grandparents, grandkids and great-grandkids moving forward. And I think the idea of going through this exercise is just an excellent one. And what it does, for me, and I'll just relate, when I put my ethical will together, it was a very interesting process to go through. Now, I shared it with my kids, and you find that you live your life a little bit more deliberately because you've kind of gone public, as it were, what's really important to you. And so you do live your life a little bit more deliberately. I had the opportunity to have my older daughter work at UCARE for a couple of years. We had this conversation. She said, Dad, it was kind of interesting to kind of watch you trying to live out what you wrote down in your ethical will. And that actually really made me feel pretty good that she was, perceptive enough to really see that. Because oftentimes we tend to make decisions and have our values, but we rarely take the time to sit down and think about them in a thoughtful way. That's why it's actually pretty exciting about that valugenics process that you have that really help people to cull out and prioritize things that are most important for them. But it's really just very, very valuable. And you feel like a burden is lifted off your shoulders when you've done this.
Well, part of it is, if you would say to somebody, tell me what your values are. First of all, it's very hard to identify sort of what do you mean by that. So here we've got 60 that are identified, and then to try and figure out which are the dominant ones for yourself, and in really 20 minutes, you can put this together. So I think it's a very, very useful tool as well. One of the things, though, that I find frustrating is that even in writing legal wills, last will and testaments, 2 out of 3 people don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would imagine when I come to ethical wills that the percentage has got to be much higher. So the question is, when do you do this, Barry?
Yeah, I find that there's 2 general times that people are more sensitive and more likely to do that. And that is, facing a challenging event or life situation. By that, it might mean upcoming surgery, having an illness, but it could be positive things too, like having a child or expecting a grandchild to come on. So that's kind of one general area, and the other is as we face and go through transitions in our life, and we're facing transitions and going through turning points at many different times in our life, whether it be getting married, having kids. Launching kids out, kind of the empty nest, area or the empty nest time. What I find is that, and I'm a baby boomer myself, is that people in middle age, quite honestly, have some life experience. And it's just a great opportunity to take that experience, convert it to wisdom, and what I think is fulfilling a responsibility of passing that on, or at least preserving that for future generations. And then certainly the other time, which is the hospice arena where I work in, where you know, people are at the end of their days and they're really trying to look for what gave their life meaning, what's important. And so that's another good time to focus on it. I actually prefer, if you can do it with a little less urgency, it's a little bit better to do it that way. Of course, the downside is that we don't have the urgency. Life happens, and sometimes it's easy to get distracted and put this off because it's not an urgency. And yet you kind of see how these natural disasters that occur any time, that you just, as Kirby Puckett, a famous Minnesota baseball player who died a couple of years ago, was taken out of baseball when he woke up one morning blind in one eye from glaucoma. And he just said, you know, don't take life for granted. Nobody's promised tomorrow. And so I always take that to heart in the sense that it's important to do it now, or at least to have a plan for getting that done. And it's something that doesn't have to be that difficult. I know that we'll talk a little bit more about how one might approach writing an ethical will and what resources might be available for them to do it. But you just never know what's going to be happening.
Yeah, I think one of the things is that it's not a perfection. It's not about perfection. My idea is this is work in process, you know. People say, well, this is my last will and testament. My thinking is, no, this is my first ethical will and process. I think that if you're doing it young enough, that you'll add to it, change to it. It'll take turns and twists, and so it's an evolutionary process that it, just like your, quote, your financial plan. You can't just put it together, put it down and say, this is the trajectory, and forget about it. I mean,
now,
if you were to
revisit it, because as you say, it's a work in process, and it clearly is, as long as we live, we continue to learn and grow, so we're going to change. So, you know, reflecting that change in an ethical will is a good thing to do. I always tell people, think of it as a process, not an event.
Terrific. We're going to take another short break. So I want you to stay tuned, because we're going to be back with Barry Baines and more of Three Dimensional Wealth.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA. Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management, financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
We now return to Three Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Direct your questions and comments to www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now the host of Three Dimensional Wealth, Rory Diefendorf.
Welcome back. I'm here with Barry Baines, and we're talking about his book, Ethical Wills. And one of the things I'd like to do is demystify ethical wills and, you know, how is it that you really could write one? Is this, you know, if it's such a big project, I don't even get started. So break it down to simple terms so the layperson can say, you know what, I can do this.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do that. And like I say, if I was able to do it, I think anybody can do it, because it's not that complicated to do. That being said, certainly you have to invest some time because you have to, you know, self-reflect a little bit and then write it down. First off, there are probably three basic approaches that a person could take for writing an ethical will. And the approaches are having an outline structure and literally having items or phrases to choose from. And this is a great way to get like a draft together just to get started. You know, some people have problems when they just stare at a blank sheet of paper, and I'm one of those kind of folks as well. So I like to have something that gives me prompts and ways to do that. Actually, that exercise is actually in the book that we talked about, my book, Ethical Wills, Putting Your Values on Paper. I also have it available as a little workbook, kind of separately, that just has that exercise. And there's also a software program that can be downloaded actually from my website at no charge to walk people through the process in like an automated way. So that's just a great way to get something down to get started. The second approach is by going through a list, or I'd say some writing exercises that are structured in terms of what you write. And so a couple of examples of exercises that I usually use at workshops that I conduct. There's one called Linking the Generations, where basically what you do is you think of an ancestor or relative that you feel connected to in some way, and if it's someone who's, you know, passed on at this point, just imagine that you can go back and spend some time with them, and what are half a dozen questions that you would want to ask them about their lives and their lifetimes. And then if you think of it again as linking the generations, I just have you reach back to generations past, move forward to, let's say, two generations down the road. Those very questions that you would want to ask the relative that you picked will be the very kind of things that people in future generations are going to want to know about you. And so those are the kind of things to write about. I have some phrase completion exercises, like, as an example, from my parents, I learned that, and then write down a number of things. From experience, I learned that, and then, you know, just kind of fill in what you think about for that. So there's a number of exercises in the book, and I have a few of them up actually on the website as well, if people want to get a sense for that. And then the last way to write an ethical will is what I call the blank sheet of paper approach. For those listeners out there who keep journals or diaries, they'll resonate with this because it's more open-ended in that way. But if you review what you've written in your journal over the past 3 to 6 months, you start to see some themes emerge, and there's a way to just pull that together. One of the things that, and so that's kind of for the do-it-yourselfer. Now, I think that what I found over the past number of years is that there's only a small percentage of people that just can, you know, grab it and go with it, maybe 5 to 10%, which is not insignificant. But what I found to be more helpful is actually doing it with a group of people, just getting together, because as people walk through, write exercises, and share what they've written, they get ideas from other people as well, and you create this group energy. So when I do my workshops, I actually really try and get people working together, and the energy in the room is just amazing, and I find that it's a lot easier for people to go through the process when they're working with other people as well. And I'm always amazed at how open and sharing people are with this. But then again, we tend to have a lot of values in common with each other. That's what keeps us together as a community, keeps us together as a family. And it's very energizing to be involved in that. And then at the far end of the spectrum, you actually can hire someone to help you put this together. I belong to an organization called the Association of Personal Historians. And a lot of the folks in APH actually are memoirists, or they help people write their life stories, write their memoirs, but an increasing number of them also are willing to help people craft an ethical will as well. So there are lots of different options that people have, going from the all you need is pencil and paper and go on the website. That might get you going. Or, you know, some of my print resources to help guide you along, or getting together with other people and paying attention to any seminars or workshops in your community that might be pointed toward this.
I'm a member of that association, and where we operate is really in the space of an advocate for clients, mm-hmm. and they will hire us and as we go through the process. And so we have a PhD. He's got his PhD is in drafting family manuscripts, and so we'll use that. But interesting, we had gone through with my mom and dad, and one thing my dad, he says, you know, this is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
He said, however, he said, and, you know, we've used the number of questions that we use sort of prime the pump. He said, however, he said, it made me remember things that I had forgotten in my lifetime and brought it back. He said, but then, he said, I read Mom's Answers. Mm-hmm. And he said, I realized how much more I loved her today than when we had first gotten married. He said, for this, it was worth everything. Mm-hmm. And our process took probably 7 months and putting it together, because we then worked with layout and design and book cover, and we really put it in a pretty nice format. But interesting. How about examples, Barry? Do you have some examples that you might share with us?
Sure. I think I can do that. Let me grab my book here and read. What I'll do is maybe just read a few paragraphs from a couple of ethical wills.
Good.
And I figure it probably the best example, not that this is the best ethical will written, it is not, but from the standpoint of disclosure, I'm going to read some excerpts from my ethical will.
Okay.
I wrote, because it was, I felt really good when I got done with it. So I'll just read a few paragraphs, and then I'll read some paragraphs from another one. To my family, in reading my ethical will, I hope that you find very few surprises. I believe I've been open about the things that I valued over time. I've also tried to live my values on a day-to-day basis. I trust that I succeeded much more often than I failed. As I grew older, not that old, and accumulated life experience, and life is a great teacher, I think I gained an appreciation of the importance of balance in my life. Balance among the family, work, spiritual and physical aspects of life, and having fun. It's easy to let things get out of balance. When they do, life can get out of control and become miserable. Always try to maintain a balance in your life. Having a good sense of humor is very important. I know you've all moaned and groaned at my puns from time to time, but overall the laughter was well worth it. It's important to have fun, and there is humor in almost all aspects of life. It's impossible to be successful in everything you try to do, so don't be afraid of making mistakes. Just be sure you learn something from them. Sometimes you can learn more from a mistake than from always doing everything right. And then it kind of goes on for about another page or so, and I kind of end that you have all been a great source of joy and strength for me. I love you all very much, Dad.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of the opening for that.
So you wrote that at how old were you, Barry?
I was 47, so it was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it's always interesting, as I read through it again, there, you know, this was right at the point where I was getting into ethical living. And there are many more things that I would that I plan on adding to this. Because the work that I've been doing in ethical wills the past 10 years have been life-changing for me, in the sense that it's just been amazing the people I've met who are getting involved in this, and just how meaningful this is to people when I work with them. So it's really exciting. Can I read a couple of paragraphs from another one?
Please do.
So right on the next page, this is a woman in her late 40s. For my children, words to last a lifetime. To my children, you have been the delight of my life, the crucible in which I became an adult. I remember each of your births. They were the most wonderful days of your parents' lives. Tom Cruise said to Renee Zellweger in the movie Jerry Maguire, "You complete me." Well, each of you completed us and our family. I hope and pray that you will cherish and nourish your sibling ties as you grow up and grow old. There's an old saying, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing well. Let me amend that to say, if it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. I fear that more and more your generation will shy away from taking risks, believing we have conquered the conquerable frontiers and that risks could endanger a comfortable status quo, a comfortable self-image. But if you don't try, if you don't stretch, you don't develop. So try something you want to do that you've never done. And if you do it poorly in the beginning, keep at it. You'll do better. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing poorly. And she kind of ends, no matter how lost or disconsolate you may seem at various points in your life, I hope this helps to bring you back on track, that your parents loved you intensely, unconditionally, and imaginatively. Remember my voice when I sang you Turalura before you went to sleep. Love, Mom. So that kind of gives, a little sampling of what ethical wills are about.
That's terrific. You have a tool you use. It's called the Ethical Will Pacer.
Pacer, yes.
How do you use that?
Basically, the way that I recommend people to use it is, now obviously all of your listeners are already getting some awareness or education. And what this is that all of us go through different stages for change. And so this Ethical Will Pacer model is actually an adaptation from a Dr. Prochaska who developed this behavior change model back in the 70s. And it's used a lot now in health education, changing, you know, your diet, exercise, those kind of things. And basically the different stages, stage one would be education, where, you know, you might be at one of those resonating moments in your life, going through a transitional stage or a turning point in your life or facing a challenging situation. And so the time might be right. So the first goal is to acquire a basic knowledge of ethical wills. Once you have that information, you may then be, you know, kind of say, oh, you know, that sounds pretty good. This is something I'm interested in. I'm not sure I want to, you know, move ahead just yet, but I'd like maybe a little bit more information or reasons for moving forward. This would be the willingness stage. So now you're starting to think about maybe doing that. One thing that can be helpful is to get some more resources or to put yourself in touch with more resources. Then next comes the planning stage, which is a leap. Now already you're saying, you know, I'm ready and I'm willing to develop a plan where I'm going to commit to going through this process. Again, having resources, move on to then the activity phase, which is where you're actually writing it. And then you go on to completion, where you finish your ethical will. And then the last stage is reevaluation, because as we talk, ethical wills are a process. It's not an event. So you're continually going to want to revisit the ethical will. So the stages are education, willingness, planning, action or activity, completion, and reevaluation.
Barry, we're going to take a short break.
Okay.
We'll be back with more three-dimensional wealth.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Going nowhere as a financial professional? Enroll today at the American College. The American College is the nation's oldest and largest distance learning institution devoted to financial services education. Research has shown that graduates of the American College's Chartered Life Underwriter and Chartered Financial Consultant programs average 20% higher production income than their peers without professional designations. For more information, visit theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu, the education you need to succeed.
Financial planning can be confusing and complex, and unless you have a solid game plan, you could be taking unnecessary risks and missing out on tremendous opportunities. Let Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates take the mystery out of investing and help you build a solid financial foundation for years to come. Diefendorf Capital Planning revolves around the family, and through our financial service companies and three-dimensional wealth centers, we strive to deliver total wealth management financially, personally, and socially. Learn more about what Diefendorf Capital Planning Associates can do for you. Visit the website at diefendorfcapital.com today. Integrity, full service, best in class, diefendorfcapital.com.
investment management is more than picking a good stock. In fact, a good company may not be a good investment. With today's complex financial products, it becomes critical to employ a true professional on your team. That's where the members of IMCA, the Investment Management Consultants Association, comes in. These professionals have proven themselves to be the best in the business. So when looking to get a second opinion on your portfolio, look for individuals with a CIMA designation. That's Certified Investment Management Analyst, a cut above the rest. Brought to you by the NYC chapter of IMCA.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
Bringing you the keys to total wealth management, this is Three-Dimensional Wealth with Roey Diefendorf. Comments or questions? Visit www.diefendorfcapital.com or call 516-759-3900. Now back to the show. Here's Roey Diefendorf.
Dr. Barry Baines is with me today, and he is the author of Ethical Wills, Putting Your Values on Paper. But another thing that you've done, Barry, is you've helped to create or make a platform for facilitators, because one of the things I said is, are ethical wills driving? Is this like just a do-it-yourself thing, or, you know, where do you go, and who is, equipped to do this? So share about your facilitators.
Sure, sure. Actually, because I am only one person, and always want to figure out a way to spread the word, as it were. But I've had requests, you know, from people all over the country that they really want to be able to bring these programs out into the public. And so about going on almost four years now, developed a training program, as it were. It's about a day and a half workshop where I train ethical will facilitators. And so this is a group of people that actually come from many different walks of life. I've had teachers, lawyers, financial advisors, geriatric workers, social workers, number of personal historians, not unsurprisingly, people from hospice, also people representing different communities of faith as well, who come together. We have these sessions. I usually keep it to about six or eight people, and go through the process of conducting workshops back in their community to kind of facilitate people going through the process of writing their ethical will. Because as we said before, it's certainly something that a person could do by themselves. You just need a pencil and paper and have the, you know, initiative and the willingness to do this. But again, I find that it's a lot easier for people if they can get some time off, as it were, to go to a seminar, go to a workshop, and actually have that sacred space where the phone is turned off and they can actually sit down, have some time to think, have some time to write, go through some exercises, share with people, get more ideas, kind of get enthused. And so over the past 3 to 4 years now, I've trained about 60 facilitators throughout the country, and they are available to put on programs in their community. And they've been actually going out and have been quite active, going from, speaking for churches and synagogues and community education, doing client appreciation events for financial planners, getting involved with, presentations for Rotary clubs and senior centers and, just different housing kind of things. I mean, the list goes on and on. We have a list of over 200 venues that are potential for bringing this information to the public. And so that's available, and anyone could just go on to the website, ethicalwill.com, and click on the facilitators page, and any of those folks would be open to, putting on a program, in the community. And so that's been received pretty enthusiastically, I'm just amazed at the great job and the great interest that these people do. Like I say, it's pretty grueling It's a pretty grueling day and a half. It's a day and a half of Barry, and I have them actually do some teach-back sessions where they actually do a presentation back to the group so that they can hone their skills and demonstrate some mastery. And we all stay together, so we're all in communication to kind of share our successes and what works and, you know, things that just make the program better and better. So that's, you know, something that I like doing. I'm actually going to do another program in Denver in November. That's going to be the last one of this year. And then I'm going to take a few months break and get back to doing some programs in 2008.
So they're not just in the Minneapolis area. You've got them in various locations around the country that we could hook into?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, I have them listed by geographic area where they are. The trainings themselves I do in different localities. So this past year I was in Boston, Atlanta, Denver, and I always like to do one at least at home.
Mm-hmm. So someone would go to that workshop and as a result become a certified facilitator.
Well, almost. They have all the things in place, but in order to be certified, and they're certified by me, and basically what I'm certifying is essentially that they're going to put on a quality presentation. I have confidence in that. I do require that they conduct a couple of programs first and send me the program evaluations from participants. And once I could see that they, you know, clearly do a good job with participants, and they, you know, that they put on good programs, that's when they get the, you know, the certification status.
Hmm. Yeah, we've put together a curriculum for advisors, certified three-dimensional wealth practitioners, and what we did is, rather than the value proposition of traveling around, because there's only, you know, limited time, is we've gone online on demand where then an advisor could go in, take that curriculum online, get CE credits, as well as they'll take their tests, and so that's been our way to sort of help advisors get into the space of total wealth management.
Yeah. And actually, the way you do it is the way I think I get lots of requests for having it be on demand, because as you know, as you say, it's hard sometimes to take time to travel and do that as well.
Well, I think what we're talking about too is that this is not just a United States thing. I mean, I think this is global.
Yeah.
And so we've been getting, I mean, I spoke at the $1 million roundtable, and as a result of that, I had groups come from Singapore, Australia, mm-hmm. Japan, Hong Kong,
mm-hmm.
Ireland, mm-hmm. Lebanon, all asking me to come and speak because they said, you know, this is important. It's not just about money. And so we're talking about, you know, how to pass on personal wealth and those kind of things. So I think it's global, and so that was the way of doing it. But now that your software is available, and that's one of the things that you can download. What's the cost of downloading software?
Well, actually, it's actually for free.
Well, there you go.
Download it and use it. What I call it valueware.
Okay.
And basically, what I ask people if they download the software, and they use it. If they think it's of value to them, let them send me a check depending on what they think it's worth and what they can afford. So I just make that available because I think this is important. If people have difficulty with nowadays with computers and firewalls and all that kind of stuff, I think it's getting more and more difficult. I am open to burning a CD with the program and just, you know, sending it to them, and that's a $10 cost for that.
All right, well, it's time to wind up. Barry, I want to thank you for joining me this hour. It's gone quickly.
Yeah, oh boy, it really has. Wow.
I hope our listeners have enjoyed it. And again, you can look at ethicalwill.com, get any of Barry's materials and his book online. And again, join me next week at the same time, because I'll be back with more of Three Dimensional Wealth. Thanks for listening.
Voice America Business thanks you for tuning in to Three Dimensional Wealth with Rory Diefendorf. Please join us again next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific Time for more tips and strategies for achieving total wealth management on Three Dimensional Wealth, right here on Voice America Business, the bottom line in business talk.